This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. Got family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. Scott Payne is the owner of this business. He's in Elkton, Virginia. He also has a lure line, Mountain Rebel Lures and Baits. He's got a great coyote trapping video. He's also a fur buyer in Virginia. Anything that you're looking for and your trapping needs, give Scott a call and he'll get it right out to you. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're an ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it. Fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light. Sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dig. Shotgun toter, Republican voter, Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA, cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got...
Well, hello everyone. It's springtime. A lot of us have just got back some information from the North American Fur Auction, and it's pretty sucky. And, you know, it's all over the forums, it's all over Facebook, people are calling back and forth, they're doing all kind of things. guys, that's just trapping. You know, everybody, especially that gets into this new, you know, until you really get a grasp on what fur's worth and what different furs are and everything like that, it just seems like, you know, everybody's out to get you. And there's, you know, I've talked about this before, and I'm just gonna mention a few things before this before we get to what the main show's about, and that's coyote locations and travel ways and understanding, you know, about managing a line and stuff like that. But, you know, fur market goes down, and I've talked about business, and I've talked about storing fur, and I've talked about all that. You know, I've been very open about all that type of stuff, but I just want to reiterate that because hopefully, guys, some guys out there take heed to this. It's your product. You can choose when you sell it. Now, saying that, if you think the market's good and you send your stuff up to Canada, just like I did, and then you get money back and it's not what you're expecting, there's a catch-22 in there because you lost control over that fur because you're not really, you know, you were hearing rumblings that it was going to be lower, and then you still send it up anyway, and you're hoping that things kind of straighten out, and they didn't straighten out. And, you know, the money's out of your hands, the fur's out of your hands, you have no control over the situation. And then, you know, it can get damn depressing, really. I mean, it really can. So, what can we do about it? Well, I'm going to point on two things this morning before we get to the main topic of the show. What happens a lot of times in trapping is guys get really fired up because of fur prices, and then they go hog wild and they go out and they trap a bunch of stuff, and then they go to sell it, and then it doesn't bring what they want, and they get mad and depressed, and they throw their hands up, and they cry in their Cheerios, and, you know, there's nothing you can do about it at that time. But then next year you've got a bad attitude about it, and then you go, well, I'm not really going to trap that hard. But what happens over the course of history, if you're a trapper that thinks that way, you're going to get bit over and over and over again, and it's going to make it seem like you're getting hammered more than you should because you are. If coon prices, we're going to use coon as an example. If coon are bringing $20 and you're thinking that's what they're going to bring, and they bring, from what I can gather, most coons are averaging somewhere between $11 and $13. So that's a $7 difference. So that brings it down to $11. You're expecting $20. You've already made the money in your head at $20. You've already spent the money in your head at $20. You've already counting on that money at $20. Comes at $11. It's not what you thought it would be. And then the reality of the percentages coming off and everything like that kind of gets in a little more reality for you, and you just get all pissed off, and then you go, well, I'm going to trap maybe a little bit next year, but I'm not going to put that much effort into it. I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that, or I'm going to sit at home, or I'm going to watch reality TV, whatever you decide to do. Then the next year comes out, and maybe the fur's down, and maybe it's not. And then you go, well, see, it didn't work. Or prices are up again. By the time you figure out prices are really up again, especially on something like raccoon, the season's about halfway over, three quarters of the way over. You start getting into Mother Nature problems with snow and ice and rain and freezing and everything else like that. So your catch is way down. And you don't have anything to sell when you do have high prices. So you catch a little bit of fur compared to what you normally catch, and so it doesn't make up for the bad years that you didn't catch as good. And the reason I'm saying that, guys, if you think about trapping and you're not thinking about the future, and I've said this several times, but it's clear from everything, all the phone calls and stuff I've getting, and the emails and the forms and everything else, you want to throw your hands up. So what happens is, you expect a price, you go out, you hammer stuff, you don't get the price, so the next year you don't hammer the stuff, whether the price comes up or not, but you never get to take advantage of the years that it's good, because most years when fur prices jumps up it's not because everybody's expecting it. Most of the years when everybody thinks Spurs are going to be real low is when I get kind of excited, for the simple reason that's normally when the bigger prices come. Less people are trapping, you have less stock in the inventory. There's a whole bunch of different variety of reasons for that. And then by the time everybody figures out that turned off trapping in their life because they're mad about last year that fur prices are up, their hands are tied because they don't have product to sell. Or they try to rush out all of a sudden and they try to get supplies and they try to get lure and they try to get land and they try to get everything like that. And the next thing you know, season's about over with, or they're standing nipple deep in snow or everything's flooded out and everything's iced over and it's just raining every day and you got sloppy mud and stuff's not moving right and you weren't prepared so it doesn't go right. And you don't make that money. And then you didn't really make a whole lot of money, so you get more depressed about it. Then the next year, you kind of halfway trap, and you make a little bit. And this cycle goes on and on and on. And to me, it's sad for trappers to be that way. You've got to trap fur all the time like it's expensive. If you don't, you're not going to have the product to sell when the fur market comes up. That's just a fact of life. If corn drops down to $1 a bushel and farmers quit growing corn, somewhere down the road that corn is going to be super high expensive. It may be a year, maybe 2 years, maybe 3 years. You don't know. The farmer that actually put corn in the ground is going to make a heck of a season. The farmers that decided not to because they're bummed because it's not what they thought it would be, and they don't take that chance, all of a sudden now they don't have the corn to sell, so the high prices mean absolutely nothing to them. Now, they can all gear up, which is what happens a lot of times, and everybody goes and plants corn, and now there's so much corn on the market that guess what? The prices drop again. That farmer that ran with the crowd and the moodiness of it, he gets all mad and he goes to do something else, and the farmer that's still making corn, overall his average is higher. Every year his average is higher because the years that it's low can be offset by the years that it's high. So there's an average within the average that a trapper's got to keep in mind. So like last year, if you averaged $25 on coon and you average $10 on coon this year, your average isn't over the 2 years is in the middle there. And you're dealing with something that you can work with. And that average within the average is where a lot of guys never play because they're moody. I mean, they're moody about their trapping. They don't get it. The second thing that I want to bring up again, it's your fur market. And I'm going to go over this real quickly because I know a lot of guys come in and out of listening to the shows. So I want to go over this again real quickly. If coon are super low next year, and you think they're super low, and everybody's talking super low prices, and everything like that. If you've got the money, and I mean be realistic with yourself and not, I ain't got the money, and this, that, and the other, and you're going to run traps or everything else. Say you're catching 300 coon a year. Well, what if you just set traps where it was convenient for and you caught 100 coon a year? Now, it say the coon dropped down to, say they're $10 again next year. So they're $10 coon. Well, for very little money, you can order 6 and 8 meal bags from uline.com. You can get them really big. You can put up that fur, whether it be coon, otter, fox. It didn't make any difference. The animal's irrelevant here, guys. You can put those in a bag. After they're put up, wipe them down with a little bit of lacquer finisher on your long-haired fur that's fur sign in. Make sure you borax the living snot out of them. Put them in that bag. Vacuum up. You don't suck the air out like you would on a food saver. You're just wanting to get most of that air out of there because if you suck too much of it out, ears and nose and lips and tails and stuff like that will puncture the bag and you kind of lose the effect. Get most of that air out. Put them somewhere where it's going to be cool. You know, it can be a spare bedroom. It can be a basement. It could be anywhere that you can keep the temperature somewhat reliable at around 55, 60 degrees. Now, even in the South, I mean, I'm in the South. It gets hot here. It's already, it's not even June yet, and it's bumping 90 degrees. There's been years that I've kept certain fur for 2 or 3 years in a spare bedroom with a wall unit that has a thermostat on it. Now, what a lot of people are going to say, and I know this because I hear it all the time and I just throw my hands up. Well, that air conditioner costs money, and it costs too much money, and it's going to take all the profit away. Are you freaking kidding me? I mean, really. Now, if you're just doing a half a dozen furs, probably. If you're just doing 100 furs, probably. But, I mean, you could make up the air conditioner on possums. It's not that much money, because especially if you keep the windows down and you don't open the doors and you do everything like that, an air condition in a wall unit that's on a thermometer to keep it about 60 degrees and you keep the sun from coming out of the room, I never could tell more than $4 or $5 a month that I had that out. Now, in the wintertime, I actually would shut the central heat and air off. Now we don't have central heating air, so it doesn't matter. And in the winter, you don't have to run the air conditioner. So you're talking maybe 5 months out of the year that you're running an air conditioner. Let's say coon are down for, let's say, an exaggeration of 5 years. $10 coon, you keep in 100 a year. That's 500 coon. If they're worth $20 a piece, see if I can do this off the top of my head. That's a $10, that's a $5,000 increase to your livelihood when the market comes back up. If otters are still high, you sell the otter. If muskrats are still high like they are, you sell the muskrats. If coyotes are high, like a lot of them are getting, you sell the coyotes. The articles that are low that particular year, you store, and then when the market comes back up, you sell. Why do you think fur buyers have reefer trucks lined around their property running 365 days a year? Because they know the fur market's going to come up. It's been going up and down since the 1800s. That's just the way it is. You have banner years and you have slow years. Sometimes you have several slow years. But what would it mean to your life? Realistically, what would it mean for your life if you thought about the future instead of what I want right now, and you stored fur the way I'm talking about on the articles that are low, and you sold them when they were high? What happens if you absorb that into your lifestyle? Well, all of a sudden now you're going to be getting extra bonus checks off and on forever if you do this. That can be anywhere from $5,000 to $25,000 to $50,000. Now tell me that doesn't make trapping a little bit different. So if you're worried about the fur market next year, and you're getting moody about it, and you're worried that the world's crashing down and everything's going to fall apart, you're going to go sell your stuff and everything like that, you're going to be the first guy that's got to buy all that stuff back at higher prices when the fur market comes back in play. And you're going to have to overcome all that money that you've got to put into it. And you're not going to be set up for it. You're mentally not going to be ready for it. And you're not going to have the best season in the world because you're unprepared. Now, if a trapper is looking at the future and he understands it goes up and down, and instead of whining about it and crying about it and fighting about it and arguing about it and everything, you just roll with it. Okay, coons are down, no problem. They go to storage. Otter's good, muskrat's good, coyote's good. We sell muskrats, we sell otter, we sell coyotes. We sell bobcats. Gray fox are down, no problem. We store gray fox. Now, once you get this system rolling, and you're doing it, and you're treating your trap line like a business instead of just something like a part-time hobby, that you're hoping to make your gas money back. You know, that's the reason trappers don't make money trapping, is they take whatever somebody gives them at any particular time, and they get hammered all the time for it. But let's say, okay, for the next 3 years you store what's low and you sell what's high, and you're building up inventory, no different than any other business has got inventory in their business. So 3 years from now, coons go up to $20, $25.
you dump the raccoons for $25. Well, you may have possums, you may have gray fox, you may have this, you may have that. It doesn't make any difference what it is. So all you're doing now is playing the highs of the market with your production that you spent all the time. Now, if you're short-sighted and you're short-minded about everything, and you think you got to have money now all the time, and there's some guys, and I've been there myself, that you can't physically do that because of money. Most of us that trap today, and probably 90% of the people that say they can't afford to do that, can afford to do that, but they're too short-sighted to see the future. Because once you get your inventory stock rolling, and you let the market do what it's gonna do, and you just play the high side and you store on the low side, you don't have very much money into it, and the more fur that you get in inventory doing that, so you're playing the high side, the less money that little bit of electricity for running that air conditioner gets spread out over many furs, so it's just pennies a piece, but you could make several dollars per pelt. Now you're making money. I mean, that's the way you make money. You could look at it from a business point of if coons just go absolutely in the toilet, if you had to work an extra job and make an extra $10,000 and you bought $10,000 worth of coon at $7 and you put them up and you turn around and you sell them at $25 3 years from now, look at the check you're going to get from that. It can be life-changing on a lot of different things. We're talking paying off houses, cars, bills, taking your wife to Europe if that's what she wants to do, buying ground. I mean, when you get out of the please give me something mentality for my fur and you start looking at it in the future part of your fur, it's life-changing. It really is. Now, sometimes it gets a little tricky because it costs a lot of money to run a line. Well, if that's the case, even if you had to do a little bit of extra work or odds and end jobs to be able to suck that up, you're going to be so much better off in the future. And I really wish trappers would spend more time thinking about their future than they do right now when it comes to the fur market. Because you can control your destiny in this thing up to a point. It's just like there's risk in everything. Your house catches on fire, you're screwed. So, you know, I was using a spare bedroom. We just bought this other house that we're turning into our lure shed. I'm going to be looking at partitioning off one of those spare bedrooms, and I'm going to have, I don't know, a 10 by 10 or something, really roughed in lumber, and I'm going to insulate that thing to the point where the air conditioner may not have to run, but maybe one every 3 or 4 days. I'm going to drop that cost way down. So if beaver are down and I'm catching beaver because I'm trying to trap otter and the market's down, no problem. I put them up, I put them in the bags, they go in the room. I'll have a clipboard there, so every coon going off of basically what I think they are, if they're good or bad or damaged or, you know, sizes, stuff like that, I've got a record because it is just like a business. So when the market starts coming up, if I notice that big beaver are bringing good money because of the square inches, I sell the big beaver. If they're looking for better quality fur, and those 30 and 35 pound beaver got better quality fur on them, which they do, I sell those beaver. The next year, if coon come back up, I sell the raccoons. But during this whole process, I'm selling what the market wants. If muskrats are still at $11, $13, which they are right now, which is amazing price for a muskrat, I sell the muskrats right now. I take advantage of that high right now, and I take advantage of the high in the future because I've got the product sitting there to sell. And I went over this before, and I think it's on the Trapping Radio, the original Trapping Radio show, and I think it's called Trapper Stock Market. If you start running it that way, all of a sudden now you've got a lot more money and you're a lot more motivated, because who cares Let me say that again. If you do what I'm telling you to do, guys, who cares if coon are $7 a piece? The only thing that tells you is if you got a buddy that's gonna sell them for $7 a piece, get your fur buying license and buy them from him. You don't have to be a full-time fur buyer. If you know guys that are in different states and the cat market tanks and they got cats and they're complaining because they're only going to get $40 for the cats, and you know historically those cats bring $100, give them $45, and then you're going to turn around and make 100% on your money in probably the next 4 or 5 years. The stock market can't touch it. You want to have a better future? You got to act like you want a better future. You want to make money in trapping? You got to act like you want to make money in trapping. And that's just a reality of the world you live in, like it or not. And the thing is, you'll start enjoying your trapping more because if you see raccoon sign, you catch a raccoon because you know you're putting money in the bank. It's putting money in the bank. It's generating income that you're going to be able to take advantage of. It's no different from a lure maker right now, this time of the year. We're making lure. Travis is over there right now. He's got probably close to 500 bottles of coon crack that over the next 2 days is going to be on the shelf, labeled, ready to go. I'm taking money out of my account right now. I'm buying bottles. I'm buying the product of the coon crack. I've had to buy the labels. I'm paying the labor after I make them for him to bottle them. All that is a negative on my income right now. But do you know what that truly means? I'm generating income today. I'm generating income today. I'm printing money today because in the future, people are going to want coon crack because of how good a lure that is, and they're going to buy that. It's costing me money today to do that. This stuff is not free. All those bottles and labels and labor and everything like that, and the electric on that other house and everything that goes along with that, all that comes out of the product that's being made today. It's no different from a raccoon or a coyote or a bobcat to anybody else. You get the product today, you put it on the shelf, and you sell it when it needs to be sold. No different. Okay, enough about money. Let's talk about getting our little fingers dirty, gloves dirty, getting our knees dirty, getting out there in the woods. I want to talk about coyotes predominantly today, probably, and I'll probably veer off like I always do because I can't help it. So let's talk about coyote locations and travel ways. Now, first off, we have to make the definition different between a coyote location and a coyote travel way, because there's a lot of confusion, and it's very clear from this when I have students come down. Because we see the world in a totally different way when it comes to the coyote world that we're chasing. Now, you have coyote locations, and then you have coyote travel ways. Totally different things. You have big locations, and you have micro locations. It's not complicated, but you've got to understand all the different ways. A coyote location historically to a trapper, you've got two roads that meet together and you've got an intersection. That is a coyote location. You've got a levee going over a pond where you've got big woods on one side where they're going to be living, and you've got sheep or goats on the other side and they're going to be eating. So that levee's an easy way for them to get across. So that's a coyote location. You have a fence gate, especially if it's not just open barbed wire. It funnels coyotes through, so that's a coyote location. You've got something that stands out to a coyote, like a lone tree on the edge of a field. You've got all different type of things like that. It's a coyote location. You've got a road that's going down through there, and it goes through a gap and on the top of a ridge, or it goes through a draw on the bottom of a ridge. That's a coyote location. Now, the difference between a coyote location and a coyote travel way is radically different. Because if the coyote travel way is a four-wheeler trail where they're going from where they're living to where they're eating and it doesn't cross that road, the road's not the coyote location anymore, the travel way is. Deer trails, four-wheeler trails, roads, edges of fields that coyotes are using, where a coyote is actually putting down tracks and droppings, how they're getting from point A to point B, how they're going through their territory. These are travel ways, guys. That's how you catch coyotes to me, because there's a lot of fence gates that are not on travel coyote travel ways that are not a coyote location, just because everybody shows that or talks about that in a demo book or a video. It's got to have a purpose. The purpose has to be coyote travel ways. How does a coyote move through an area? And there's a lot of different ways you can look at that. They're going to take the path of least resistance most of the time. They're going to want to stay out of sight of people, especially when people are popping shots at them. They're going to want to go to where the food's at. They're going to want to go from where they have a lot of cover to where the food's at. They got to get there somehow. They're going to go through that whole territory in a way that they're using trails just like you do when you get on the road. Now, the thing is, you may think, okay, like Subway. I personally like Subway. They're convenient when I'm traveling on the road. So a location for Clint could be Subway. Well, not really, because Clint doesn't eat Subway in Dunlap, Tennessee, because I eat at home. So you can go set all the traps for Clint you want at Subway, but Clint ain't going to the Subway in Dunlap, Tennessee. You're going to have to figure out where the Subways are at if I'm going to a convention. And it's going to be about the same time that I'm going to be going through there, and it's going to be getting about 1 o'clock or so, and I'm going to pull in, I'm going to grab a quick Subway because I can eat as I drive. That's a Clint location. The Subway in Dunlap's not a Clint location. Now, the way that I'm going to a convention, now that's a travel way. Well, I'm getting ready to go to Pennsylvania here in a few weeks. I'm going to be going up through West Virginia because of the way that it is. I'll go up 77. I get off on, I believe it's 19 or 22, that shortcut that cuts across the interstates. I come back out on it so I don't have to go through Charleston, and I go all the way up through West Virginia. That is my travel way. Now, just because there's a bigger road that goes to Pennsylvania, which is 81, I'm not going that way because it's not convenient for me. So even though that's a path of less resistance, you're not going to catch Clint on 81 going to Pennsylvania unless something is on the eastern part of Pennsylvania. Now, if you want a Clint travel way in Dunlap, I've got to go to the post office every day. My travel way is I go out, I get on 28, and I go up till I get on 27, and then I go into Dunlap, and I go to the post office. I'm there every day. That is a good travel way to catch Clint. There's all kind of intersections all over Dunlap that I never see on a weekly or a monthly basis. I don't have any reason to go there, so that's not the travel way to catch Clint. Coyotes are the same way. Now we're going to get into what I consider a micro location, because all this plays together, guys. If you're gonna, and I'm not saying I'm right on this. This is the way that I think when I go out and I set coyote traps. I'm looking for locations that are on travel ways that have a higher percentage. So what I'm trying to do is find travel ways that coyotes are actually using that come across each other. It could be a four-wheeler trail that coyotes are using going one way, and there's also a coyote sign in that road where they're going a different direction, but those two meet at one place. So to me, that's a coyote location because it's got two travel ways. Now, right up the road from that, there may not be any sign and no coyotes using it because they're not using it, just like you're not going to catch me at Subway in Dunlap. that's just not my routine. So you're going to have to put eyes on the ground. You're going to have to spend some time scouting. You're going to have to set more traps to catch a higher percentage of the population by the way that I'm telling you to go about it. So what I'm looking for is, how is a coyote flow through the countryside? Now, if you get on Google Maps or you pull out a topo map and you look at any type of terrain that's over 100 acres, you will see that the ground has a natural flow to it. If you dumped 1 million gallons of water on one side of it, and it's the high side, how's it going to flow through that area? You'll see from a map, most of the time, it's going to go in a direction. And I'm not talking about the individual creeks or low spots. I'm talking about if you know, all the hills are going to kind of go in one direction. All the fields are going to kind of go in one direction. All the roads are going to kind of go in one direction. You can see a flow of the land. Well, your animals, most of the time, go with the flow of the land. Because that's the way the cover is going to be. That's the way the food base is going to be. That's the way the prey animals are going to be in those different areas. And it's going to be a flow through the land. Now, as a trapper, if you cross-cut that flow, so if the flow is going from a straight north to south, and you cut from the east to the west, every time you come up to a travel way that a coyote could use, you could put in traps. But what do most trappers do? Somewhere on that pasture, they find 3 or 4 intersections, and they put 3 or 4 traps around them. Well, a lot of those places are trying to catch Clint at the subway in Dunlap. And you're wasting your time. Now, if you see coyote tracks on them and you can find coyote scat on them, you're good to go. If it's an intersection that goes somewhere that coyotes are going to be going to or from, good to go. And a lot of this plays on experience. And I think a lot of guys that are just getting into trapping the last couple of years, they see the intersection and they think that's the holy grail, and they go and they put out a bunch of traps right there, and they may or may not catch anything, and they get depressed a lot of times. The way I've learned coyote locations is I've done a whole lot of snaring. And one thing that snaring teaches you very quickly is if a trail is not being used by your target animal, you're not going to catch him. And a trap is no different than a snare in one regard. If you don't have it where the animals are, you're not going to catch them. Now, back when I was doing a whole lot of snaring, when I would go to a lot of these strip pits and bigger acreages and stuff like that where it's legal to snare, I would put out 300 and 400 snares with different methods. And I would try to make a cross on that property. So if we had the mythical property and it was a square, I would try to go east and west, find a road that goes east and west, and I try to find a road to go north and south. It didn't always work out perfectly, but you kind of get the, I'm trying to break it up into 4 different quarters. So if a coyote wants to go from the top to the bottom, he's got to cross where I've got equipment. If he wants to go from east to west or west to east or south to north, he's going to have to cross where I've got equipment. So what I would do is I'd get in these, and at that time I had a Jeep truck, and I would just load the back with kill poles, and every single time I came to a edge of a field and it had a trail, I'd put in 2 snares. I came to a deer trail that I could manipulate where I wouldn't be wearing out the deer, I'd put in 2 snares. I come to a 4-wheeler trail, I'd put in 2 snares. I'd go to the other edge of that field, I'd put in some snares if there was a trail there. If I found trails, if I've got elevation on the top and the bottom of those ridges where stuff's going crossing, I'd put in snares. If there was a pond, I would look for how an animal's going to go around the pond, I'd put in snares. And I would work that system all the way across that road, say going from east to west. So any way that a coyote is going to go from north to south, if I'm going east and west, he's going to come in contact with that stuff. Are they going to be on a trail all the time? No. But for the most part, you're going to pick them up all over the place. So then I would get on the road that's going north and south, and every single time I could come up with some logical way that a coyote would be going through there and there was a trail, I'd put in at least two snares. If there was a lot of sign, I'd put in 6, 8, 10 snares. And then I would follow that all the way north and south. So no matter how a coyote traveled through that area, he's coming in contact with my stuff. Now what that taught me was coyotes do not use trapper locations as much as trappers want them to. Because the little trail on the edge of the field can catch a coyote. How they're going around the pond can catch a coyote. How they're using a deer trail can catch a coyote. How they're using a four-wheeler trail can catch a coyote. All those different ways can catch coyotes. Every single one of them can catch a coyote. And believe it or not, if you run 5 miles of doing this, and you've got out, say, 60 coyote snares or 60 travel ways, and you've got these snares sitting on every one of them, you will be absolutely flabbergasted at how coyotes work across an area, because a coyote in a snare kind of tells you that's where they're at. So if you see this with snares over and over and over again, the next thing that should come into your mind is, well, you know, majority of these weren't caught where that was going to connect with that road intersection or that fence gate or that rock wall or that tree out into the... Most of these coyotes would never know that I had equipment there. Now let that sink in a little bit. So if you run to a farm and you just set 3 or 4 intersection points and you run off the farm, what are you leaving? Majority of the coyotes. Now you're already on the farm, so you've got expenses for being into the farm. Once you're crawling around on a farm, your expenses go way down. The expense of trapping normally comes because you go from one farm to one farm to one farm all day long, and you're racking up all these miles, and most of them are listening to the radio going 65 miles an hour, and you're not catching nothing. But if you block all this up on somewhere, and you're looking at travel ways like you would with snaring, things really start to get exciting. And what I mean by that is you start picking up coyotes in some really weird places that's not in a video, and it's not in a book, and it's not at a trapping demo. And it's not places you've ever really thought about for coyotes. Coyotes run creeks. Most people don't think of coyotes running creeks. I love putting dry land sets next to creeks. I catch everything there. But I also catch coyotes there. So if I'm coyote trapping, you better believe I'm going to have coyotes on next to tree. They run them. That's not a normal coyote location. I love beaver swamps for coyotes. I catch them on beaver dams. I catch them on the islands in between. I catch them where you've got old logging roads running through there. You got built up areas, different things like that. Not something that's the classical road intersection. Or out west, the classical tank or pond. They're everywhere. They travel everywhere. But the limiting factor that trappers put on themselves is they see the world through the location of the intersection. Not the coyotes that are wearing the road out 300 yards down from there because they're going through a low gap on a ridge going from one bottom to another. So they never set it up. So they never get the animals that are using those trails. Eventually, hopefully, a coyote does use that road and they catch a coyote. So they have success. But it's not in big numbers. You know, and it should be no surprise to anybody out there that if, you know, I want to maximize my time in production, which means I've got to minimize my expenses. So if I can pick up 10 coyotes on a 5-mile stretch covering all the trapping ways, plus the cats, the fox, the coon, everything else, or I'm gonna run 50 pieces of equipment, or I can run 5 locations on 25 farms, my expenses go so high that even catching the animals on those farms, the profit goes so low because the expenses are real money too. It's not just what, you know, in trapping, you got two schools of thought. Some guys just do it for fun. Hey, man, knock yourself out. I do a lot of stuff for fun. I've done more of that in the last couple of years than I've done in a long time. Sometimes I just trap stuff because I want to go trap it. And I don't worry about expenses at that point. I want to catch stuff and I want to make money, but I don't get tore up about it. That's cool. But at the same time, if you're going to worry about the money, which most people do, whether they want to admit it or not, you've got to cut those expenses. So if I can catch 10 coyotes on 5 miles and someone's going to catch 10 coyotes on 10 farms that spread over 40 miles or 50 miles at $3.40 a gallon, you can see the profit difference here. Plus, when you start looking at these trails, you start seeing coon trails and fox trails, and you start seeing cat locations, and you start seeing some pieces of water that has muskrats and beaver and otter in it, that if you're just running from one intersection to the other because it's the biggest, you don't get to find these other places that really help you out on catching mass amount of fur on low expenses. And that's kind of what I want to get a grasp on. The second part of this is, how do you run the line? Now, one of the oldest phrases in trapping, and I don't think it's wrong, and I don't think it's bad, but I don't think it's that efficient. For me personally, that I've seen on my own trap line now. Now, if you do this, don't get your panties in a wad and start saying that Clint this or Clint that. I'm just telling you from my own personal experiences and observations. If it's good enough for one trap, it's good enough for two traps. Someone that says that is a location trapper and not a travelway trapper. Let me say that again. Someone that puts multiple traps every time they get out of the truck is a location trapper and not a animal travelway trapper. Because if you're going to run 5 miles and block up the travelways to catch the most amount of fur, and you're going to be putting 2 to 4 traps out at every stop, you're not going to get very far in a day. Because, I mean, everybody talks about setting 100 traps in a day and this, that, and the other when it comes to coyotes, or 60 or 70 or whatever, and all that hogwash everybody always spreads on the internet. When you go out, especially if you're putting steel traps in the ground and you're using stakes and you're not using things like portable pockets and drags and augers and all that other stuff, the reality is if you bust your butt and you've got average soil in the average part of America, you're going to be getting about 35, 40 sets out. Let's say it's 50. Let's say you've really drank the coffee and you're drinking Red Bulls every 10 minutes. So you get 50 brand new sets out when you go out and you set traps. If a place is good enough for one trap, it's good enough for two. That's 25 locations. If it's good for one, it's good for four. Because you got skunks and all the other arguments that come in with why you set more traps. How many traps you got out? I should have used something that was a little more rounded number, but 50 divided by 4. It's not that many locations, guys. So you're running a very short line, and you put a lot of energy into this very short line that's only going to come in contact with a very few animals. I hope that sinks in a little bit. What I've learned from setting traps, and you can take it or leave it, I would rather set 50 locations a day than I would 25. The law of averages are always going to win out on my side. Sure, I'm going to have a possum in some of them. I have a skunk in some of them. I have a coon in some of them. Even if I catch 10 animals, I still have out way more locations and way more chances than someone that sets two traps at every single location. Another thing about setting two traps at every single location is most of the time you get out of the truck, you've been trapping a while, you've got some experience, you see the spot. That's where the trap goes. So you go over there, you put that trap in, And then because you've made this arbitrary rule that you got to set 2 or 4 traps on every single location, now you start looking around and you start putting traps in half-ass places. You start forcing stuff. You start making stuff go where it's really not supposed to go. Now, the set that catches more animals than all the other sets you put in there is the first one you set. Why? It's the best spot. Especially once you get some experience, it's very clear where the best spot is most of the time. You just know it. Your brain computer clicks in and goes, that's where the trap goes. This is how the wind's blowing. This is how the wind changes at night. This is how they're going to be. It's going to get more exposure. It's going to have more odor dispersal. It's going to have whatever you come up with. That's the spot. And then the second trap is not in as good a spot are you to put the first one there to begin with. So you put in a good spot, then you put in a half-butted spot. The first spot catches more of the stuff anyway, and every now and then you catch something on your secondary trap. So really, how effective is that secondary trap? We're talking percentages now over a long period of time. It's not that great, but you still have the energy expended in that trap. And it shorted your amount of locations that you can set in any one day. So what I've learned to do is treat my trap line like a snare line, because the snare line has taught me that animals do not always go to the classical locations. So if I'm going down the road and I'm putting traps and there's a field and it's got an edge and it looks like there's a trail going down there, yeah, I get out and I'll put a trap in. If there's a road in the middle of the big field and it's got coyote tracks or droppings on it, it gets a trap, single trap. If there's a big trail somewhere between that and the next tree line, I put another trap. If the tree line comes up and there's trail, I put a trap. If there's deer, big game trails going through the woods before I get to the next field or whatever's over there, it gets a trap. Just like I did with snaring. Now, the most amazing thing is the road that most trappers are going to trap may or may not catch a coyote. Let's say it does catch a coyote. What about the coyotes that are not on the road? You're just absolutely ignoring them, which means you're not selling them because you didn't catch them. Don't be that guy. Animals do not always just run the intersections. That's the point I'm trying to get to you. If you run your trap line like a snare line and you set all these different locations up, because you have to with snares. No one's going to run out with a dozen snares and set a dozen snares and think they're going to conquer the world. They're going to set out as many snares on as many trails as they can. And the thing about snares, when you run that system, they outproduce traps. Because the animals are telling you where they're going to go. They got trails there. And as they go down the trail, you catch them. Because that's right where they're at, is the travel way, not the location. That's why you just don't go up to an intersection and put out 4 random snares around the intersection. You wouldn't do very good because you're not on the travel way at the micro location. Now, if you've got a bunch of stuff that's coming together at an intersection, well, yeah, I'm going to put traps there. I don't have anything against intersections. I like intersections. But it limits people a lot of times for the catch they're getting for the potential they have on the ground that they're at. And that's kind of what I want you to think about. As you know, when you go scout out an area, go find out how many trails are running through that place. Because if deer are going down a trail, you don't think the coyotes are going to be following the deer? Really? If you've got turkey and hogs running down a trail, you don't think coyotes are going to use that trail and track that animal? Really? What if that trail never comes in contact with the classic intersection? Are you just going to ignore those animals? I mean, really? It doesn't make any sense. So the way that I want you to think about this, not that you have to do it, not that it's the only way to do it, but it's a different way to do it. And I think you'll be very pleased with the results if you do it. Run your trap line like a snare line. not a trap line. You know, a lot of guys out west do this anyway and not even think about it. When you've got miles and miles of sage and you've got 10 or 15 cattle trails that cross the road and you set on those cattle trails for an intersection, you're setting the travel ways up. That's what you're doing anyway. You just may not be thinking of it in that form. When we get to the east and we have more travel ways because we have more structure in the vegetation and roads and hills and ponds and everything like that, and everything's more condensed, those travel ways still have the same value as they do out in Montana where you're setting the cattle trails. Or you're setting the game trail up against the rock ledge in Arizona or New Mexico. It's the same thing. You're when you're doing that, you're travel way setting. You're not really location setting. Now that's coyotes. That's the way that I run my line. I want to set out as many travel ways as I can get. And every day I'm adding new ones. Over and over and over and over again. It would be nice to be able to run 300 traps on these travel ways. But here's what happens when you run that many travel ways. Because you'll never make it to that many with foothold traps. You start catching so much stuff, there's no way to keep it maintained. It's easier to run 150, 200 traps on locations because you don't catch as much. Because you don't have to maintain as much. Because you don't have as much activity as the guy that sets the travel ways. Which means your expenses, again, are lower. And that means you make more money. We're Americans. There's nothing wrong with making money. So your production goes up higher by doing this. That's all I want you to say. Now, the other thing that I do want to say, and it can be taken into any animal that you have. It can be mink, it can be raccoons, it can be fox. My favorite places that I actually snare red fox at are in between fields. Where you have a field, and then you have a growed up wooded area, it can be 5 feet or 100 yards, and then you've got another field. Now there can be a road going right up the middle of both of those fields through that tree line. Do you know where most animals cross from field to field at? On the edge through the woods from one field to the next, not the road. But where do most people put their traps? Right on the road. But the animals are not using that as much. Think about what you're asking that animal to do. Because you picked a location in that wooded area between two big fields, it's got a road going through it. You're expecting that animal to be going flowing through that field, make a military left-hand or right-hand turn, go over to the road, go through the wood line, make another military left or right-hand turn, go back to wherever they were going to, and then continue on their way. You wouldn't do it, and they're not going to do it. But what you will find in that situation is several game trails going through the woods, it's not on the road. And the red fox, if you've got red fox in that situation with snares or traps, either one, you can flat rack them up because you're setting where they're at. You're not asking them to go somewhere different. You're not asking them to be able to smell something and go way out of their way to go investigate it. It's right where they're at. On a river, big river, I do a lot of stuff out of a boat and canoe. I love high bank trails because they're travel ways. You never know what you're going to catch, especially if you start running blind sets or mafia sets. You never know what you're going to catch if you run coyote snares all the way down to coon snares. You're going to have animals using that on a nightly basis most of the time. It's a travel way. Now there can be a field right next to a river. Let's say like around here, a classic field setup, and it's the same way in a lot of parts of the country. Say you've got a like the Sequatchie River here. It's about 60 feet across. It can be shallow or deep. It's an absolute obstruction. Then you're going to have, because the privet and the brambles and everything like that, you'll probably have 15 or 20 feet of really thick stuff or hardwoods or pines or whatever up against that river, because most people now aren't cutting trees all the way up to the riverbank. EPA seems to get excited about that. And you have erosion problems and everything else. So you have this buffer zone up next to the river. And there can be this great big field, which we have all over the place. I've seen it in Iowa and Illinois and Wisconsin, Michigan. I've seen it in all different places. It's the same everywhere I go. You have a big field out here next to that wood line. Where do the trappers go to catch their animals? In the field. Where are the animals at? In the woods, on the travelways. Regardless of what they do in that field, they're eventually going to bump up against that river, which is going to put them on a trail, which is going to move them one way or the other, either upstream or downstream. So if you go out and you put, say, it's a 10-acre field, and you go out there and you got a road coming into it, and you set a trap and you put all sets on all four corners, which I know a lot of y'all guys do. The only ones that you really got a chance at where anything's really going to happen over and over again is the ones up against the woods. And hopefully your lure goes into the woods over those travelways and pulls the animals off the travelways to come to your trap. Now, will they cover the edge of the field? A lot of times they will. That's a good place for a trap, especially if you can see evidence of trails. The travelways. Now, the guy that wants to catch a whole lot of fur leaves the field alone, except maybe up against the wood line on the field side, and he puts in a couple of traps, but he moves into the travel ways where the animals are telling him they're already going, because the trails are made for a reason, and it's because feet hit the ground and they disturb the soil. So when you find the travel ways, the animal's telling you, I'm right here, all you got to do is catch me. So the guy that moves into the woods where these high bank trails are at, you know, they don't have to be right on the water. Now you've got the animals where they're naturally going to go. When the guys were down here from Illinois, we went to one of the bridges. I showed them where I caught 6 or 7 coyotes in very little time. And there's a field right there. And I pick where the flow of the land comes into a point of the woods, and I've got snares on the trails, plus I got high bank trails. Well, I mean, I'm catching 2 or 3 coyotes out of whack. Now, I'm not going to do that with traps out in that field, because the coyotes are going up next to the river to go under a bridge that's something similar to an interstate. So their travel way is the hot location, not the field. Nowhere in the field, not the road in the field, nowhere. The travel way itself is where you can put a dirt hole, you can put blind sets, you can put snares, you can put whatever you want right there. But the travel way is the secret. And most guys aren't going to set them. Like, and I'm going to talk about raccoons a little bit. Let's just take this a step farther with raccoons. When I was in Iowa, every single bridge had traps under it. Maybe 10% of the bridges had 220s or dog proofs in the high bank trails. Where's majority of the coon traveling through at? On the high bank trails. A coon trapper that only thinks water, a bridge is a location. The water edge is the location. The trail that's 3 foot above of that, that's wore down in the mud that you'll trip over if you're not paying attention, is where the coon's at. Trappers inherently know this because they go down to the water's edge and they put in their pocket or their stakes or whatever they're going to use, fish on a stick, whatever they're going to do down there. And then what do? They take a trailing scent and they run it up the bank. Somewhere in that brain's going, I got to try to get that coon off of where he's at to down where I want him. Now, what's a guy that thinks about trapping in the way that he'd run a snare line? Well, they're right there on the trail. Catch them on the trail. if you've got to drown them to get a longer check, run it from the trail to the water. Don't try to pull an animal off the trail, because that's where he's supposed to be. And it's the same thing with the coyotes or the cats or the fox or anything else like that. It's totally up to you to figure out where these trails are at. Then it's up to you to figure out the best way to catch them. And if you're thinking trails are only snares, you're fooling yourself. You can put a dirt hole right on the edge of a trail. You can put a flat set right on the edge of the trail. You can put blind sets in the trail. You can put mafia sets in the trail, the way O'Gorman talks about doing it. If you really want, I'm going to close with this. See how much time we got. Yeah, I'm going to close with this. If you want to have an exciting season, I'm talking about just like a kid exciting season, run about 50% blind sets or mafia sets on these game trails. Watch what happens. You will catch more stuff than you ever will in a dirt hole. The animals won't know what hit them. They're doing their normal thing, going exactly where they normally go. And you put a piece of equipment right there. Same, you know, cause the reason I say blind sets, because there's a lot of the country that you can't snare. Or you got to have some type of crazy snare laws where they're not really, you know, I mean, it's just insane. Well, go with the blind sets. Watch what happens when you start travel way trapping. Your catch goes up. It just gets more fun. It's just the way it is. Something to think about. I'm not saying it's the right way. It's just my observations. If you give it a shot and you think I'm full of crap, which is fine, run half of your stuff the way I'm telling you to do, and run half the stuff the way you normally do, where you're just setting up road intersections and fence gates. But if you do that, I get 10% of the catch. And if everybody out there were to do the same thing, I'd be a rich man in 1 year. Just something to think about. Y'all go out, find you some ground, start scouting them trails out, start figuring out how the animals are moving through there, and get those skinning knives ready, because you're going to need it. Till next time, this is Clint.